Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Miriam Yaskirovich Arman transmitting from Tiberias on the Galilee, the Sea of Galilee in Israel, speaking to you about gyro vocal motion technique, what it is, how you use it, and why. Look, we've done some interesting shows together. We're going to have a really big one today because I'm going to bring up David Bowie and Freddie Mercury in a clip that I found to be absolutely extraordinary in a little while. But first, let me speak to you about why. Basically, the media and the teachers and the universities and the powers that be, including doctors and speech pathologists and clinics of communication, you know, everybody who is basically in the business of voice, have tried to keep down gyro vocal motion technique, my teaching, in places where I should be teaching. And basically, as pretty much everything else in this world, it comes down to money. Once you understand the gyro, and once you understand where the voice needs to go, and once you understand that once the voice goes into that place, basically, your vocal problems, your vocal difficulties that you might have are over. Now, people don't really want that because it doesn't make any money. The ear, nose, and throat doctors want you to come back. If they want you to tell them that you have a sore throat, that you start talking and you're always sore, they want to give you medication. That's good for the pharmacy business. Big Pharma makes huge amounts of money with injections of Botox into the larynx, if you happen to have, into the vocal cords, if you happen to have something called spasmodic dysphonia, which is a very, very, very serious illness, disease. It's when the vocal cords are so worn out that they can't hold the sound anymore. And basically what happens is the sounds begin to bleed into each other, and then there is no more uniformity in sound. And basically, you develop a tremendous, tremendous wobble. Then the voice goes down into the throat, and then basically, you lose your communication ability. I've had quite a number of students who have had Botox injections into their cords. It's a simply horrible thing. It also costs a lot of money. When I first brought out the Voice of Spiritual Approach to Singing, Speaking, and Communicating, the first edition in 1999, I sent a letter to the Voice Institute in Philadelphia. I sent a letter to Dr. Slotover, who was then, I don't know if he's still, the head of the Voice Institute, and I said, I would like to address your body of doctors, pathologists, surgeons, to speak about how to save the voice without surgery, without intervention, without radical medication. And he wrote me back a letter saying, I find your theory quite interesting. Thank you very much for sending your book. And with that, basically, that was finished. Then there was a very interesting conversation with an association of speech pathologists who basically said, if I continue this work, they're going to sue me. Well, that hasn't happened. It's now quite a long time, and I'm carrying on to do what I'm doing and helping a lot of people. Geovocal motion technique basically saves voices, takes voices that are basically ruined, that nobody really would touch, and say, hey, you know, go find yourself something else to do. People who are tone deaf, people who have disabilities, are stuttering, they come to me. And depending on the person and depending on their ability to connect to this information, it can be very, very quick, or it can take quite a while. The reason for that is that when you are working with changing attitudes and changing habits and changing things that you've been told all of your life, some people can do that very easily, and other people have a great deal of difficulty doing that because the information is ingrained. Where is it ingrained? Well, it's ingrained into the instrument. That means it's ingrained into the voice. But more importantly, it's ingrained into the mind. And once you have your mind set on things, anything, it's very, very difficult to change that. Even if you yourself consciously decide, I really want this, I really want to make a change, I'm really, really, really right there with you, it can still take a long time, because consciously you may think that you're in command, but there are a lot of other factors that play a big role in what you're going to do with your voice. Musicality plays a great role. The ability to listen, the ability to take information exactly at face value. That means if I say, allow the air to enter at the teeth, pass the roof of your mouth, and move into all the way into the back, where there is a nice, cool little breeze, and you will feel that the soft palate, which is all the way back there, will almost automatically rise on some people more than others, but you will immediately feel this entrance of the air without breathing. So you're used to hearing. Take a breath through your mouth, pull it down into the lungs, use your diaphragm, whatever it is that you've been told. Here, none of this will work, because the key word to the approach of Geovocal motion technique is allow. And allow is something that's extremely natural, that happens absolutely naturally. So the mouth, meaning the lips, the outer part of the lips, needs to be only slightly open, exactly as though you would speak. And then you need to think of allowing the air to enter at the point of your cleft. Now, most people don't even know what a cleft is, but the cleft is the indentation right above the lips, which almost splits the upper lip into right and left. So from that place, right above your front teeth, the air is allowed to enter, and you feel the air reaching into the back of your soft palate. Your soft palate rises. At the very moment that your soft palate rises, you will notice that your tongue relaxes, that your tongue lies down in its bed. And that movement, meaning raising of the soft palate, dropping of the tongue, does something extremely important, very naturally, without any difficulty or work or force at all. It just lifts the soft palate, drops the tongue, and opens the throat. So these three things happen almost instantly. They have to happen almost instantly, because every time you need to go to what will, in a few lessons, basically in a few hours that we'll spend together, be the final position of where the actual beginning of the voice is, you'll notice that every single thing that we talk about has its own motor system, has its own way of working. But when we put all of those things together, they will all work as one, because your knowledge has been modified to think of the voice in the way that we're talking about. All right. So, first and most important thing is that we need to know that there are three vessels. Now, the mouth is a vessel, and that's what we're concentrating on today, the mouth. So once we understand that singing and speaking are basically the same thing, you're using exactly the same instrument, and no more pressure should be than there is for teaching. You see, I'm thinking about teaching, and out came teaching, when the word should be singing. In other words, speaking and singing is exactly the same thing, because the same instrument is used, except less of it. So when you begin to understand the movement of the first vessel, which is the mouth, and it's not even the mouth, because we don't use the jaw. The jaw, under no circumstances, must be tight, must be in a hard position. Everything is soft. The muscles in your face are soft. The lips need to be soft, so there is absolutely perfect diction. The front teeth are your guideline. The cleft, the upper lip, is the guideline. the air is allowed to enter from the front teeth, past the hard palate, which is the roof of your mouth, pulls all the way past the uvula. The uvula is that little punching bag in the back that doesn't seem to have any reason for being there, but it certainly does. So that pulls back along with the soft palate, and the soft palate rises. Now, something very, very interesting. If you do this and you take your thumb and you place the back of your thumb at your front teeth and you put your thumb all the way up the hard palate, all the way to the back, you will feel that there is a ridge between the hard and the soft. That ridge basically delineates what is movable and what is not, meaning that the hard palate isn't going anywhere, but the soft palate is. The soft palate is actually, when you go all the way into the back with your thumb, you'll feel, if you move your thumb upward, you'll feel that there is a give, and there is actually a hole behind the soft palate. Don't tell me again. No student of mine ever irritated in a lesson. However, when soft rises and when you're in that soft space is actually able to move upward, okay, then you'll realize at the very second that that moves up, the tongue almost automatically drops down and the throat opens. Basically, what have you done? That minuscule amount of air that you brought in, that allowing of the air to enter, because now you're thinking about the air entering through your mouth. You're thinking about the way it's traveling from the front teeth, past the hard palate, past the uvula, into the soft palate. The soft palate rises and the tongue drops. That is, from this moment on, knowledge. And that knowledge will come to be every time you do this particular movement, this particular motion, which is actually not even a motion, but a thought process of how to use that particular vessel. Now, if you take both of your thumbs and start them at the upper front teeth, and then move them along the teeth to the left and to the right, all the way into the back, all the way to the end of your wisdom teeth, you will find two tiny little round bones covered over with the same skin that moves the soft palate, the same skin that your gums are covered with. So this tissue, this skin, basically is porous. Porous means that the air comes through it. But those two little bones are amazingly, amazingly important, and I call them the portal bones. Now, the portal bones are attached to the left and the right, all the way in the back, behind your wisdom teeth, little round stubbles of bone. And then all of a sudden, when you think of sort of smiling into the back without moving your face, without moving the mouth, but just thinking of smiling with that air that's going to the back, you will feel that the portal bones are actually moving and allowing the soft palate a bigger rise. Now, the portal bones, basically in medical language, are called the sphenoid. And the sphenoid is like a butterfly through the whole cranium. And the movement of the cranium has a great deal to do with our work, ultimately. There are joints in the cranium, there are sutures, there are plates. In other words, there is a moving force. And that moving force is air. The mouth is the first vessel of air that is going to provide the portal bones an extra bit of energy to move backward and move the soft palate up so the tongue can drop down lower and the throat can open up wider. Remember, we're talking about a minuscule amount of air that is needed to accomplish that, okay? That minuscule amount of air, the moment it hits the soft palate, is going upward. Why? Because, as we said, the tissue is porous, air goes through it, but at the same time, that air also goes into the vocal instrument, into the larynx. It goes down the column of air, what we call the column of air, which is your esophagus, which is your windpipe, all the way down into the diaphragm. If you allow, here is that great word again, allow, if you allow that air to just go its own way, you'll find that if you leave your body absolutely relaxed, your diaphragm, which is in the middle of, underneath your stomach, basically in the middle of your torso, will drop down, expand outward, and all of a sudden you'll have established an opening from the bottom to the top, meaning the soft palate. Now, the air that is in the diaphragm is no great big deal. Believe me, however, for what the diaphragm is able to do, which is to support the height of the soft palate, to support the column of air, which supports the height of the soft palate, diaphragm is absolutely great. So once it has expanded, underneath the diaphragm, right in the area of your groin, not your stomach muscles and not your buttocks muscles and not the rib cage in the back and not your lungs, but there are pelvic muscles which are basically underneath where the diaphragm has expanded, and those muscles we must learn to contract slowly. Nothing is done hard. Why? Because if you contract them too fast, the air that's in the diaphragm is moved up too quickly, and A, it disturbs the vocal cords and the larynx, which are down and the throat is open, and it goes onto the throat and you will feel that you need to push. So we don't do that. We do that nice and slow. The air is being brought up through open throat, drop tongue, dropped larynx, and moving right back up to the soft palate. So basically what you've established is a column of air support for the height of the soft palate and the opening of the throat. Most important, above and beyond almost anything else that the mouth, and the mouth itself doesn't really do anything except house all of that, is to keep the throat open, to keep the soft palate up, to keep the tongue down. These are the functions of the internal part of the mouth. What you never want to do, ever, is have a tongue that is lifting in the back because it closes off the instrument. What you never want is a soft palate that is crushing on top of the tongue and you choke. Then you have to push against the larynx, against the instruments with the muscles of your throat and push out the sound. All of that is deadly, absolutely deadly to the instrument over a period of time. Now, the period of time that I'm talking about is very, very relative because on some instruments it can go on for quite a while and on other instruments it doesn't go at all, absolutely not at all. So, look, again, the mouth, and that's what we're going to talk about today, and that's the only thing we're going to mention today. Next week, we go into the second vessel. So, the mouth, most important, the outer part of the lips, the cleft, the air is allowed to enter, pass the hard palate, pass the uvula, pass the portal bones in the back, lift the soft palate. You'll feel a little bit of cool air in the back. The tongue drops. The throat opens. The air travels down the column of air into the diaphragm. The diaphragm expands. The pelvic muscles lock up, meaning contract inward. Slowly, the air is again moved up through open throat, dropped tongue, dropped larynx to the soft palate. And at the soft palate, it does exactly the same thing that it did going down, gives up some air that goes to the top, through the hole, comes around, passes the hard palate, comes back to the front teeth, right back to the cleft, right back to the upper part of the upper lip in order to speak the consonant. The consonant. Why the consonant? The consonant doesn't need a lot of air. T, p, t, f, k doesn't need a lot of air. Vowels need a tremendous amount of air because vowels are the sound. Vowels are the expansion. Vowels are the vibrations. So no condensation of vowels inside the mouth. You put vowels inside the mouth, you will immediately have a potato sound. Everything will be down here. exactly in the place where we do not wish to be. So, very, very, very important, in order to have excellent diction, in order to have really, really, really no pressure, no tension, no potato sound in the mouth, relaxed jaw, relaxed face, relaxed throat, relaxed larynx, relaxed throat muscles, nothing gets done with any kind of agitation or force or belting or out, except for the little movement of your pelvic muscles that basically move the air back up and bring it to the front teeth with the intention of speaking the consonant. Because the consonant needs very little air, the consonant is very crisp, and the consonant is the leader and the mover and the shaker of the final word. So because of the fact that you have the intention of the word, the air moves forward and allows you to speak the consonant. That, my friends, is the mouth. That's all there is. No sound. No sound. No vowel is made inside the mouth. If you do, your mouth is closed, your tongue is up, your soft palate is down, the vowel closes up the whole inside, takes up all the space, you must push forward, and that is something that in our way of working does not work. We do not push. We do not push, we do not strain, we do not do anything. We allow. So that, I want you to learn, and when you learn that, and when you've done this a few times, you'll realize that the soft palate is moving higher and higher and higher, and that's because the air is getting used to entering, and the support from the diaphragm is helping that soft palate to stay up. The throat is open, nothing is interfering, and there is a muscle that actually pulls the soft palate upward. We will talk about that muscle more in detail when we need it. So, end of mouth, that's all there is. Finished, that's what you need to do. That's what you need to learn. If you need to buy the book, go and get it. The Voice, A Spiritual Approach to Singing, Speaking, and Communicating, 4th edition, The Kabbalah of the Voice. Everything is outlined much more than what we have in our time, but you'll get the gist of it. Now, today, I want to bring something up because David Bowie died this week. We had a really horrible week as far as losses of great talent is concerned. Look, David Bowie is not my favorite singer. I didn't follow his life. I didn't follow his music. I love Freddie Mercury. I do. I always thought that he was a really, really great talent with a great voice, with a wonderful, wonderful ability in his instrument. He was just naturally great. I have no clue who taught him, but I can tell you that a voice like this doesn't get taught, it gets born. So if he had a great teacher who took him along and didn't touch his instrument and brought him to where he went, all the power to him. Because let me tell you, both of these guys are just unreal on this particular piece that they sang called Under Pressure. Okay, this was taken, and I'm reading. One day in 1981, Bowie reunited with Queen, Freddie Mercury, in a recording studio in Switzerland with the intention of doing vocals for the song Cool Cat. David got bored and suggested writing a new song from scratch. According to Mark Blake, author of a biography of Freddie Mercury, they began a 24-hour marathon of wine and cocaine and ended up with this musical gem. This is incredible. Back in the days when auto-tune wasn't needed, you never hear this from most singers these days, of course, because everything is just digitalized. You don't even need to sing. You need to have a great face, a great body, and then you can pretty much do anything. Here, you hear those two, and what you will hear is that when their voices are in the right place, they are clear as anything can be. And then when they're putting on a grate on the voice for whatever kind of, effect they wanted to achieve, okay, all of a sudden the voices go down, start grating, are in the throat, right back up again in the next phrase. You must hear this. It's unreal. At one point, Freddie Mercury goes into what I call a sping. We will learn this. Singing is the greatest thing for building the voice into phenomenal height. And that's what you're going to hear that he did. Not only did he do this one time, but his whole voice and David Bowie's voice at this time is set up in such incredible height that you can only get to that kind of place when you know all three of the vessels that we're talking about. Combine them, then you will learn how to sing. And once you learn how to sing, you start in that incredible height, stay there, and never, ever have any vocal problems ever again. Have a listen.
Pushing down on me, pressing down on you, no man at all. Under pressure, the burning building dies, splits the belly in two. Puts people on streets, ba-ba-bet, beat it up. That's okay. It's the terror of knowing what this world is about. Watching two good friends screaming, let me out. Let tomorrow get me higher. Okay. Shifting around, keep my brain on the floor. You don't have a and screaming, let me out. Tomorrow, let me turned away from it all like a blind man. Sat on a fence, but it don't work. Keep coming up with the limits, so slashed and torn.
I mean, you heard in here 3, 4, 5 different kinds of voices that they're able to do basically from one place. And when they go into the other place, when they go into the throat, and when they great, you know that. So what the sound is when it's clear and what the sound is when it grates are two different positions. One position where he went off into the sphing, meaning into that really, 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 really high place, okay? That's called singing, and that you can only do when you are really, really in the highest place and you have the opportunity to go up, 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 up. Listen to it over and over again. We have a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do. We have 2 sessions more of 2 levels of 2 vessels. You have to know. You have to know that I go for the gusto of one note. And when that note sits, basically, everything will follow. Knowledge is the key. Technique is the key. Understanding is the key. Opening up yourself to this knowledge is the key. Knowing that when you do what is being taught, you will have a finely tuned instrument that needs to be worked on continuously and all the time. We have great work ahead. I'm so glad you're here. Please share with your friends. Share with your friends. You have my emails, miriamarman@aol.com. Easiest. Wishing you a great week, a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day, and so happy to be with you. Be well. God bless.